As well, I'm Jessica Hafner. I'm one of the general surgeons that works in the Lakeshore Health Partners group with general surgery. I do breast surgery as well as other general surgical specialties, but I'm interested also in breast surgery given my training. So for kind of just following along the packet here, for initial tumor removal, now if this is a benign disorder, lumpectomy is the same thing as an excisional biopsy or as any other kind of biopsy that we do to take out a lump or an abnormal cluster of cells or calcifications or anything else that we see on mammograms. But when it comes to cancer, is the lumpectomy or mastectomy right for you? So when it comes to lumpectomy, that's what we call breast conservative therapy. You know, back in the day, back in like the 1800s, they used to take off the entire breast, including the muscle underneath, all the lymph nodes in the armpit, all the way up to underneath the shoulder. And this was very disabling for women and really restricted movement later on. Hi, guys.
Hey.
It's just us. Everybody else wants to hear about menopause. I kind of figure.
I don't want to hear about that.
Yeah, I know. The house is awesome.
We're living it. What more do we need?
Yeah.
I'm living it too, because it's like, get away. Don't touch me.
You are your dad.
I'm a former patient of your dad's in a classmate of one of your younger brothers.
And I met him the other day. And yeah.
Did you meet my dad?
Totally.
Oh,
yeah. You're mini me.
The voice and the mannerisms.
Everything. It's really funny.
And it took me, like, the older people to step in. Be okay with it and be recognized. Yeah.
That's funny.
So, which one did you go to school with?
Dave, I was actually between Dave and Steve.
Oh, okay.
We were all in choir together.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Was it Mr. Bruton?
No. Marvin's not.
They love singing. It's the daughter's party they used to do back then. My mom was so impressed, you know, where she had grown up and
this is way better.
Sing much, and her dad couldn't carry a few. And all of a sudden, there's this huge group of like men that want to sing. And she was so impressed with that. Wow.
That's funny.
I'm distracted.
Well, if you guys want to hang out.
We will kind of wander over.
Yeah, totally. Out. Seeing the house is way funner than listening to me talk.
And if you're
pretty things,
I'm going to take one and take a look at it.
Make sure I did it right. He's got his boards coming up in a couple months. It's a good review.
I should. And I got to tell you, if you use CSAP, the breast stuff is crazy. I disagree with half of it violently.
It's like 10 years ago.
Well, again, it is old.
Yeah. It's scary. Yeah. That's funny. So, good stuff.
Oh, okay. We'll be good.
You can ask as many questions as you want. Boo.
I promise.
So, we're just on the first page if you guys are joining us later in the game. So, when we're talking about, we were just talking about how they used to do mastectomies, the Halsted mastectomy was a completely mutilating procedure. But then they discovered, and of course that was back in the day when people used to have huge tumors that were invading into the skin, chest wall, everything else. But now we've learned that we can do less aggressive surgery with the same survival. So a lumpectomy is when we just take out the, and on the next page there's some little cute, adorable pictures if you want to see exactly what those procedures mean. But the lumpectomy is when we just remove the tumor, usually with the rim of normal tissue surrounding it, and we localize that preoperatively usually, or if we can feel it, we just take it out that way. With a simple mastectomy, or total mastectomy, same term, just the breast tissue is removed and we don't take out lymph nodes, but those can be addressed in a separate procedure at the same time as this as well. With the modified radical, so this is a modification on the old mutilating surgery, but we take out the entire breast tissue along with all the lymph nodes as well. Skin-sparing mastectomy patients sometimes ask about this if they're candidates, and it's usually if we're going to do a reconstruction right at the same time as their the cancer surgery too. And that depends on some factors, if they're getting radiation right away, if they are planning on any further treatments, and depending on if they even want that. Not every patient wants reconstruction. So we save the maximum amount of skin. And then when do we recommend mastectomy? There are several cases. If there's large tumors, if there's tumors in two areas of the breast, that if we take them out in a lump, that it would make the breast look kind of cosmetically unpleasing, and ideally we would just do a mastectomy and do a reconstruction, which has a better result cosmetically usually. And then several other instances when somebody has a lumpectomy for cancer, we also recommend radiation at the same time. So if they can't have radiation for whatever reason, excuse me, we do recommend a mastectomy instead, because they can't have that full treatment that we would need to get rid of the cancer in their breast. And then talking about the lymph node surgeries that are done, that those also have changed a lot in the last 15 to 20 years, from doing complete dissections of the armpit lymph nodes, taking them all out almost completely, to just doing some little, what we call the sentinel lymph node biopsy. It's a lot less morbid for patients, and they do very well afterwards, and the survival is really the same as long as the, you know, there's not any tumor within those lymph nodes. So what we do, depending, you know, that not everybody's a candidate, to be able to be a candidate for sentinel node, you can't have a palpable node that we can feel in the armpit. You have to have, your tumor has to be relatively small. So that always makes it a less likelihood of having it go into the nodes. But the complication risk is lower overall compared to the axillary dissection, lower risk of lymphedema and other of those kinds of complications. But like I said, the survival rate is the same. So that's a little... little picture also of the axillary dissections, but the recommendations also that if we take out a sentinel lymph node and it comes back as positive with cancer in it, that also depends too. And if we need to go back and do a completion axillary dissection of whether they're going to be getting radiation to that area, because that will decrease the tumor in the armpit as well. So it depends on a couple different things. And then a lot of talk is going on right now about prophylactic mastectomy. And I know Dr. Pettinga downstairs is talking about risk and genetics and things like that for families and patients that have the BRCA 1 and 2 genes. And that's what she had, that she had the prophylactic mastectomy done. And who gets the prophylactic? You know, it's a breast that is completely benign, and it's completely removed. So who's a candidate for that? A lot of people think they might be and get scared just, you know, from having, you know, having some biopsies done in the past that, you know, might as well take the thing off. But really, you know, at some point, most people are just like, they're causing nothing but trouble sometimes. So, you know, the screening, though, for a lot of the patients where there's not an increased risk with the gene mutations, the screening is so good that we catch cancer so early, unless you're like never getting your mammograms, and then it's a different story. But really the follow-up is so good that it's not really indicated unless there's a very, very strong family history and either your parents or brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, things like that. So that's usually what we look for the most. And then some people also get it because of their risk for getting breast cancer is so high. Also from other, you know, biopsies that they've had done that show certain things within the tissue that aren't necessarily precancerous, but just increase the risk a lot. Also, a couple places I read, if you have just really dense breasts, they recommend prophylactic. I'm like, that's a little... That's a little aggressive.
There's a really wide geographic variance of this.
Yeah.
The New York City area is just a high level of interest in it, and it's done. And in the West, it's not. It's
yeah.
Limited. is like your local culture.
Yeah, it really is. And the doctors who are, you know, oh, sure, we do this all the time kind of thing. And I mean, it's all, it's patient comfortability. We obviously wouldn't recommend it unless we really thought people needed it. But in certain areas, women just don't want to have to deal with it, and they don't want to think about it, and they just rather know that their risk is practically zero. So, and that's part of the culture, like you said.
What percentage, like, if you, what's the accepted lifetime risk of breast cancer that give you the, you know, that prophylactic
mastectomy? Yeah. So the average risk is about 11%. You know, 1 in 9 women is going to get breast cancer before their 90th birthday. So increased risk usually is about twice that. So I think at that point, but then there's other things that we can also do for patients that have increased risk. If they have, you know, certain lesions that make them higher risk, like atypical ductal hyperplasia, and some other things we can do, tamoxifen even for 5 years will decrease their risk substantially. So that brings it down pretty much to the average 11%, and then doesn't need the mastectomy at that point. So there's other things that we can do and lifestyle modifications to decrease risk as well. Exercise, you know, weight loss, green tea is like a fun little thing too that is, it turns out to decrease your risk pretty a little bit. It's kind of interesting. If you can't like get it down below that like 20-25%, it's all about counseling and, you know, talking to patients that, look, as long as you're a good follow-up patient and we can still do mammograms and still kind of follow up on things and make sure that we're staying on top of it, there's not really a need to do it unless they want to have it off kind of thing. So, but there is a lot of stuff that we can do and new medications that come out and things that decrease the risk pretty substantially. So at this point, there's not too many patients that...
What are the age where the risk is higher in for the average person? This curve that goes up until you're 90 years old. But if you're a BRCA patient, the bump of that curve is at a lot younger age. So if you have a fairly high risk that's attached to that, you know, there's a little more drive to get this done before you're 35 or 40 or 45 years old.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's in the normal curve, I mean, it's really not that very likely at age 40.
Yeah.
It's more like that 65 or 70.
Yeah.
Well, you maybe wouldn't do a prophylactic surgery then because maybe new technology will come up in the next 10 years, 20 years that says, here's how we screen now and it's much more effective, or here's a pill that's much more effective if you're not pushed in that corner. But the BRCA thing kind of pushes it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with the ovarians too.
Yeah, and their lifetime risk of developing breast cancer is in like the 80 to 90 percentile compared to the 11% that we see typically.
Like
so.
By age 50,
yeah.
So if you're BRCA positive, you have a 90% chance of developing breast cancer
within your lifetime. Wow. So I mean that's until your 90th birthday, of course. So I mean, which whereas the last 20 years of life, a lot of is when most of it does come up, but. Early on, like you said, it's a lot more common in the younger population. So those are usually the ones that we do genetic testing for too, because they tend to be not always positive. It's just sometimes a weird variant, but it's always more likely that they've got something else going on, kind of thing. So, yeah. You have any questions or anything else?
I think I've heard maybe the mastectomy, I mean, because I'm kind of the cut it off if it's, if that makes it go away.
Exactly.
But has there been something about mastectomies being dangerous or not a good idea?
Not really. I mean, the surgery is... The surgery itself really isn't very dangerous for patients. You know, when we do do mastectomies, we would, and if it's for not having cancer within the breast, we would take a few lymph nodes out at the same time just to make sure there's nothing else going on. But if you don't have cancer, there's no need to take all of them out. So there's not really too much risk itself of like side effects and things like that from the mastectomy, you know, with any surgery, bleeding, infection, blood clots, stuff like that. But that exists with any surgery that we do for people. So yeah, it's not too,
I don't remember.
Too bad. Yeah.
Something about where doctors were sort of leaning away from recommending that, even with.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a bigger surgery sometimes than people need. Yeah. You know, yeah. The bigger surgery you have, the longer you're under anesthesia, the higher risk for bleeding complications because we're just doing more work in there and things like that. Whereas, you know, if we can do a lumpectomy for somebody and if it's reasonable within the treatment plan and everything that we're considering, we do recommend that. It's a lot better. It's a quicker recovery for patients too, less, you know, morbidity with moving around and kind of getting back to their usual activities too. So it works out pretty well for people.
So it depends yeah. on your reconstructive option if you want that or not.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there's some really intense like slaps that plastic surgeons can do versus doing just like implants. And so there's a lot more surgery that's involved with that too. That doubles the procedure time and possible complications and things like that afterwards too. So,
yeah. There's a big surge in interest in the abdominoplasty flap. But then it turned out to be like an 8-hour operation.
Yeah, those are kind of a big deal.
People felt terrible for 3 months afterwards, like a truck hit them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, got a lot less interesting, and then insurance paid a lot less for it, and plastic surgeons got a lot less interesting
yeah.
offering it.
Yeah. But it was like a 2-in-1 tummy tuck kind of procedure, too. So patients were like, oh, great. And then you're like, oh, great, I just got hit by a truck. Perfect. Great. Wonderful. Yeah.
And implants were on and off the map. They're back on the map, but they work a lot better than you thought. But, you know, sometimes the surprising thing is who doesn't care to have a reconstruction.
Yeah.
I always assumed if you were younger, you would prefer it, and older ones wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had that turn on its head a few times.
Mm-hmm.
People that talk to me.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, okay. So I'm just like, yeah.
I'm fine with it.
Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Yeah. But it's
one of the things at a meeting that somebody talked about was patient satisfaction. And the thing it was most strongly correlated with was if the patient got what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
If you talked them into doing a reconstruction they didn't want, they were very dissatisfied, and vice versa. And, you know, I mean, it kind of makes sense. But, yeah, they got what they wanted ahead of time rather than what the doc thought they needed.
Yeah.
That was the only thing that really strongly correlated with a high satisfaction of it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's funny.
And maybe there will be different options for how you can do it in the future, too.
Yeah. Good. Well, thanks for coming to listen. I had my fun. My Lynette came and listened.
You know, you're a good soldier. You did.
I know, and I knew nobody, like, you know, because they're like, oh, you know, either everybody's had surgery or they, you know. So I'm like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. Everybody likes listening about menopause and stuff like that. It's good stuff.
Maybe the surgery is threatening. Like coming in
and it is a little scary.
Yes, discussing your will or something.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to
I try not to be too ominous.
Treatment of the front line.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, it's good to hear it when you maybe don't need it.
Yeah. Yeah, because the surgeon is almost always the first person you see when you are being treated for breast cancer or anything. I mean, if your primary sees something funny on mammogram, they send you to us typically to get it taken out, so we're the ones that see you and talk to you about it and what's going to happen, and so it's
we're
usually the ones.
Tilts coming is the relatively non-invasive and minimalist stuff, you know, that they're running trials on.
Cryo
irradiating
and all that stuff.
Cryo, which is freezing it into an ice ball and watching it disappear and then following it.
Because
the imaging is so good, we find so many things at very small sizes, and this surgical stuff that was standard practice is becoming overkill.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a semi to the grocery store to get your weekly groceries.
Mm-hmm.
It may turn out that a lot of those minimally invasive things sort of obviate the need to do mastectomies.
Mm-hmm.
Although you have to do your follow-up, but you know, you put a probe in there and kind of zap one local area. It's like, oh,
that's okay. A whole lot easier. Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting how medicine advances in this sort of state. Get frozen.
Mm-hmm. Unless we start doing
tests to tell you, well, this person is at much better, bigger risk. You know, there's a huge misconception, I think, on the BRCA stuff that it's so few of the actual, even the family linked ones,
mm-hmm.
only about 10% are BRCA ones.
Yeah.
And that's the ones where you have a family history, like my mom had it. So you test mm-hmm. for BRCA, only about 10% are BRCA positive. They're still family-linked cancer, but it's not a gene that we can measure.
Yeah,
so
BRCA3.
So you get a negative BRCA, you go home falsely reassured that you're BRCA negative.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true, you know. And so there may become better genetic tests that just happens to be the one that almost serendipitously showed up about 20 years ago, and they've been able to make some data predictions out of it. But there's clearly other genes involved with it. So we may be able to identify high-risk people from swab mm-hmm. with their cheek cells and say,
yeah.
Oh, you don't really have to worry much dying, so your aunt had it, but your DNA's good. You know, and that's kind of where we hope things will be at over the next 20 years, that we'll have those profile things.
Yeah.
Because I got prostate cancer on both sides of my family. It's like, how much do I want to worry?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Well, it isn't.
Yeah.
You know? And actually, it's a really good question. If you knew what was going to happen to you, would you be better off, or would you rather not know?
Yeah.
I'd
go crazy.
I'm not sure. Why. She might want to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put down a spot for you. Yeah.
So did Angelina Jolie have a family history? Does anybody know that her mom had?
Her mom died of it when she was like in her early 40s or 50s.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't
so
know
that's
that.
Why she went off.
I read it in the Time magazine article. I'm like, I better read this because people are going to ask me about it. So then she got tested and she had BRCA. I don't remember which, must have been one.
It's one of the things that matters, you know, if you don't do reconstruction, no big deal. But what really matters to people is, you know, what's available, can you have it done?
Yeah.
You know, one of the bigger issues in healthcare that is bothersome is if you're a socioeconomic low person,
mm-hmm.
your odds of even being offered this is low, and your odds of being able to get a reconstruction are nil. Because a plastic surgeon works in Jackson, Michigan, and takes Medicare or Medicaid. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Angelina Jolie's got access to the finest reconstruction you can get.
Mm-hmm.
If she chose, I have no idea if she did.
Yeah, she did. Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not broadly applicable in America. It's not evenly distributed. And so what people choose to do and what we recommend is really kind of predicated on evenness of, you know, that kind of care, but it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you talk to Dottie about doing trans, he's like, they don't pay enough, it's too much work.
Yeah.
Follow-up, big deal. And that's priority in Blue Cross, but it's Medicaid.
Yeah. I never even saw one done in residency. They just don't do them anymore. Okay. I saw one lat.
Yeah.
Lat flat.
But they are broadly done in California.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe
they
have plastic surgeons in Orange County.
Probably. I'm going with that. The TV ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then you have to look at, you know, public policy. How much does all this cost? This is one disease.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important disease, one disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I listen to what the genetics people say who work for Myriad and think, thumbnail, dinner, napkin calculation, that's about a $2.5 billion recommendation they just made about who you should test and all that, what the test costs. Really important to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Still pay for childhood immunization and
mm-hmm.
you know, other cancer screenings that are maybe less costly. And the answer is probably no, but mm-hmm. you know, if you've got a lot of special interest thing, maybe you can pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think more people think about that now. When you're pregnant,
kids
think about that. Yeah. And, you know, depends. You know, if Obamacare controls most of healthcare, maybe it will be accounted for because they'll just say, this is what's covered, this isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
But if you can afford your own stuff, you can go shop
mm-hmm.
at the mall. You can say, I want this, this, and this. And you can check.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Wasn't that a big thing for a while? A body cast skin that you paid for yourself?
Yeah, they would have them driving around at the malls and stuff, mm-hmm. and sure, just pay for your own CAT scan. And then you find a whole bunch of stuff you didn't want to know about.
Oh, yeah.
And stuff that has to be biopsied now, and it was fine.
It's like
now you know.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And then you're stressing out, and lots of people can't sleep.
And you're trying to get your doctor to order the diagnostic test that will be paid for.
Yeah, exactly. They knew what they were on to.
Generated a lot of business is what it did.
Yeah. They'd still do the carotid ultrasounds, like, out of the mall or something, and then patients come in with that, and it's like, I don't know.
They do them where? At the mall?
Well, it was over in Eastern Michigan. It was somewhere.
Yeah.
It's like a little.
You come by with a little van and sign up for this
lot. Yeah, sure.
I guess I go to the wrong mall.
I know. You probably go to the right mall if you haven't seen that. It's a little sketchy.
Conclusion